Miami is a city full of good-looking people, great weather, and fabulous beaches.
The annual Miami Gay and Lesbian Film Festival is under full swing, bringing some of the hottest queer films, documentaries, and shorts to the forefront.
Now's a great time to take a trip to the part of America that pokes itself into Latin culture.
Come dive with us into the pool of great queer movies as we talk with Kareem Tapch, the festival's programming director.
This week, they're showing Outrage, a new documentary about outing closeted gay politicians.
Little Ashes, a film starring the sexy Robert Pattinson of Twilight as a bi-curious Salvador Dali.
And Luchando, a documentary that looks at the life of Cuban prostitutes of all persuasions. Why is this the film to watch?
Kareem has been involved with programming the festival for over 7 years and has his finger on the pulse of where we're going as a community. What hot topics in gay cinema does he see in the coming years?
We also have a fascinating interview with filmmaker Juan Carlos Saldívar, who escaped Cuba in a boat called The Party Girl.
Hey!
His new short, José Martí and I, examines the sexuality of Cuba's beloved founding father, the political and cultural figure, José Martí. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Billion.
And this is Feast of Fun from Miami. Today's show is brought to you by generous support of fabulous listeners like you.
We really can't do the show without your support, so please visit our website, feastoffun.com, and make a donation. Buy a t-shirt.
Your financial support makes all the difference.
Thank you.
Believe it or not, people, we are in Miami, the city of charm and fabulousness. Its new expression is... Express yourself.
Woo!
I can't believe it, Mark. We made it all the way to sunny Florida.
I know, and only one plane ride away.
I know. Wasn't that charming and
wonderful? You know what's wonderful, though? It's like 80-some degrees here in Miami and Chicago. It was like 43 degrees this morning and raining.
Well, Miami Beach is a hometown to a lot of good-looking people, hot men and women, and hot films as part of Miami's Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, which is... now currently underway until May 3rd. And we have a delightful guest here today is Kareem Tapch. He's the programming director for the festival. Welcome to Feast of Fun.
Hola, bienvenidos.
Bienvenidos, saludos. How are you?
Good, how are you guys?
So Kareem, what brought you to wanting to get involved with this film festival? What's the history of the festival?
We're in our 11th year
here
in South Florida. I got involved about 7 or 8 years ago on a screening committee, and I've done every job in the film festival since then. So I know it inside out.
So you worked the mailroom too.
I started selling tickets, watching movies and selling tickets. Yeah.
And so what made you want to sort of rise in the ranks into becoming the programming director for this festival?
Well, it's very personal because I've certainly grown with the organization, and being a Miami native,
Which I understand is very rare here.
It's a big rarity. In fact, I was probably, for a long time, the only Miami native on staff. Everybody else was from somewhere else.
You grew up in Miami. You're about the same age as I am, 26.
28. So I'm a little older than you. But
I'm just kidding. I'm lying about my age. But so you've sort of seen the city transform, and you're a gay man, and you've sort of seen the city embrace its gay heritage. Sort of accidental, because it's sort of people always say Jewish, old people, and gays flock to the city, to the tip of America's wang.
Yeah. So
you know, and what is it that attracts these three different types of groups into, I mean, besides the good weather and the good looking people, but
I think the good weather has a lot to do with it. Sure. I think people love being out here. Everybody's half naked in the streets almost all the time.
I know. It's like even the bums take steroids or something.
Yeah. I was
like, they're good looking.
We were having lunch today, and he's just like, look at that guy. Oh my God, that guy's half naked. That guy's half naked too. I'm like, just walking down the city street, like it was nothing.
Yeah. I know.
It's like the uniform.
But I mean, so like, how do you, because last year you guys actually celebrated your first Pride Parade, is that true, in 10 years?
We actually just celebrated our first Pride about 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago,
First time in 10 years.
How could a city that's so gay not have a Pride? Is it because it's so gay?
A regular Pride.
Yeah,
a
regular Pride.
I think it's just because it's so gay all the time.
They're just like, we don't need it.
It was kind of just like, being gay is their MO. But it was actually, it's really great that it happened. It
so
was
you had an a amazing turnout.
We had a parade, we had boosters right on, it's actually a pretty unique pride, really right on the sand of Miami Beach. Patti LaBelle was Grand Marshal.
What's the fan? I don't know what that is.
Right on the sand.
Oh, the sand. Okay. I thought you said the fan. I was like, okay. Right so on Patti the LaBelle, fan. Well, that will turn anything gay, Patti
why,
LaBelle.
Why, was there a reason to do it this 2 weeks ago? Why did it happen this year?
I think there was kind of a growing feeling that Miami needed to celebrate its queerness. And
most of the places in the country, like June, like the end of June, is too damn hot here.
It's miserably hot here. It's a fantastic city. But, you know, you'll drop in if you're outside for four or five hours yeah. at a pride parade.
And so, but I mean, what was there, so it was kind of like a touristic reason? Or, I mean, why didn't it not happen last year and this year? Was there, like, some people just decided, hey, let's organize it?
Yeah, I think it was pretty much what this, you know, what this city needs. This city needs a pride. And it was really, really smart because that's exactly what we needed. We had like 20,000 people turn out for first year Pride.
Was there a driving force behind it, though? Was it like the city was saying this, or was it like a gay organization?
It was actually the city of Miami Beach's mayor, Mayor okay. Maddie Bauer, who's not gay. Mm-hmm. But
gay-friendly.
Gay-friendly and certainly yeah. got elected by the gay vote. And she created the City of Miami Beach Gay Business Ad Hoc Committee.
And so, like, the first thing to do was to organize right, this Pride exactly. event.
What can we do to promote gay business in the city?
Because it's Lauderdale that has the cuckoo councilmans, isn't it? Is that the place?
Where Lauderdale has the cuckoo mayor of Fort Lauderdale.
And he's the one that wants to shut down the toilets where all the people that vote for him go to have sex.
Right. Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Oh, my God. So and so you were involved in you're working on two documentaries as well, but you came to the festival as a writer.
Yeah, I did freelance writing for a long time. The person who did our programming and hospitality job saw something I wrote, said, "Hey, you're an opinionated little thing. Why don't you come in and give us your thoughts on some of these films?" So I started by screening films for the film festival. And again, doing freelance, mm-hmm. when a ticketing job became available, I'm like, oh, I could use some money.
How long have you been doing this now?
This is my seventh or eighth year
at
the film festival.
And so this sparked like your desire to make documentaries? Is it because of your involvement in the film festival? You thought, I think I'd like to do a film.
I've always been a film lover, mm-hmm. Film and theater, like a real queer.
did you do shows in high school? No, musical theater?
Sadly, I'm very talentless in that regard. Couldn't hold a note to save my life. But a big lover of documentary films. So I think the festival kind of helped awaken that
spirit. And yeah. So in the last 7 years, what kind of changes have you seen in the kind of films that are being submitted and shown in these types of festivals? Because one would argue that, you know, 10, 15 years ago, a lot of these films could only be shown at these festivals. And these festivals were sort of like the reason that these films were made. And today, a lot of gay and lesbian themed films or films that appeal to a gay and lesbian audience are shown pretty much everywhere. And with the advent of the internet and sort of new ways of distributing these types of works, these festivals are starting to have a different role, more almost like a museum exhibition of great films.
I think certainly has that kind of museum exhibition feel, but at the same time, I think it's really a driving force behind getting some of these films made, because what we see in the mainstream is such a small percentage of what gets made on a yearly basis. So we have a Brokeback Mountain or a Milk only every once in a great while. I mean, actually having Brokeback and Milk so close together, it's a pretty big accomplishment, I think.
It feels like all the movies that come out are gay somehow, you know?
Right. So I think there's more and more gay characters. Mm-hmm. And I think having film festivals and gay being more and more in the mainstream, like through shows like this, I think that helps people say, hey, you know, there's some financial viability and there's a big audience out there and people want to see themselves on screen.
And so, and seeing themselves on screen, they are. And so with the festival way underway, you guys have picked another collection of fantastic films. I've noticed that a lot of the films touch on the sort of the creating a metaphor for homosexuality, if I could be so bold here, or anal sex or whatever, but a metaphor for the gay experience by learning and examining what it means to be Hispanic or Latino.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the heart of what we've done across the 11 years have been Latino, gay Latino films. And we have seven this year. And it's certainly a society that still is kind of combating its homophobia on a day-to-day basis. So just to be able to celebrate having seven queer Latino films is a pretty big milestone.
Where do you find these people?
Difficultly. It's a year-round process to create. These 10 days take, you know, another 355 to create. We go to film festivals around the world. We're at the Toronto International Film Festival, Berlin, Sundance, the big queer film festivals like Frameline in San Francisco and Outfest in Los Angeles. And we're just seeing everything that's out there, scoping the internet day in and day out. I mean, sometimes it's just one sentence that hints to something.
Mm-hmm. And, like later on in this today's show, we're going to be talking to Juan Carlos, who did a short little film about, who claims that the great Cuban literary and political founding father, Jose Martí, was gay. Mm-hmm. So it was like someone like him, how did you find him?
Juan Carlos is actually a fairly well-known local filmmaker. And pretty active in the filmmaking community here. So I've known him for some time, and he's worked on a couple of things. In fact, a really fabulous documentary called 90 Miles about his journey with being Cuban and gay and relating that with his relationship with his father. So Juan Carlos is somebody, was almost one of the easier ones to find. Mm-hmm. But some of them really are just like scoping articles in newspapers and lines on blogs.
So, like, one of the sort of notable documentary films was one's Paolo, which was directed by Andrea Franco. What day is that going to be showing? Is that on Wednesday?
We're showing Paolo on Thursday, actually.
That's going to be Thursday. Okay, so I'm looking here at their calendar.
Thursday, April the 30th at 9:30 at the Rigo South Beach.
And so that Andrea Franco's Batievsky's documentary film, Paolo, we are introduced to the adorable Paolo, I'm mispronouncing his name.
Paolo.
Reategui. Like millions of other immigrants who've made it from New York City, made New York City their home, Paolo is searching for his version of the American dream. He shares the spacious Brooklyn apartment with a sister and a friend, and he parties at the city's hippest gay clubs, works at the high-end Manhattan boutique, but returns back to Peru in search of his father and his roots as a Peruvian gay man. And so the film is sort of a journey of one man and sort of understanding who he is by sort of trying to reconnect with his estranged father that he hasn't spoken to since he was a child. And so it seems like a lot of these films have that sort of theme going in them, don't they?
I mean, I think that confronting your past in order to move forward, which is what Paolo's all about, it's something we see in queer cinema a lot.
But for especially for like Hispanic queer people, absolutely. It seems like even stronger because you're challenging not just your cultural and your racial identity, but also your sexual orientation identity. And so those three things are coming together. And sometimes, well, you know, you can't be a good Puerto Rican man if you're openly gay, or you can't be, you know, good Mexican or good Peruvian person, but if you're embracing this gayness or even the concept of homosexuality is something that's coming from the American culture, the English speaking side of your identity.
Well, the great thing is seeing films that are really challenging those notions and filmmakers who are going the extra mile and saying, hey, you know what? I'm Peruvian, I'm gay, I'm successful, I could be happy.
And hot.
And Paolo is certainly a hottie. Yeah.
And he's going to be actually there, like, what is he going to do? Like, sign autographs or, like, touching people?
Or letting people touch him.
A picture taken with him.
Or a picture taken, yeah.
He's really cute, though.
He is cute.
He has a nice booty.
He does have a nice booty.
So you're bringing a lot of the filmmakers. So that's going to be on Thursday, April 30th at 9:30 p.m. at the Regal 17 Theater. What are some other like highlights that you have that you want to touch on?
Well, I'm really excited about a documentary called Luchando, which we're screening.
Luchando. Oh, yeah, I saw that.
It's almost sold. It sold out, didn't it?
It did sell out, and we've actually opened the second screening, a second auditorium. So I like we have seats available.
Because it really answers the question. What's the difference between a Cuban hooker and an American hooker?
And not much.
Right. And it's really not much. But I mean, it's really, there's some really wonderful characters in that.
Hookers all share the same, no matter where you go in the world.
Some are hot, some are missing their teeth.
Why do you think this film about Cuban hookers and sort of the behind, the real life of the secret life of Cuban hookers, why is it resonating so much with the scene people that attend the films here?
Well, I mean, in Miami particularly, because there's such a huge Cuban community here, and we're always constantly starving for more and more information from Cuba, and particularly from gay Cuba, because I mean, if you go to Cuba, the queer scene is really like, go to the park and find out where the party is tonight, and then drive 3 miles into the jungle.
Really?
Is it really like that?
Yeah. The stories are kind of wild.
Have you been to one, or have you been to Cuba and gone to a gay party there?
Once. Short trip.
What was that experience like for you?
It was go to the park.
It was kind of like you go and there's people know where it's at, and it changes on a weekly basis, and you pay like $3 or something like really ridiculous.
So it's like
you want all night, and it's like. Work, it's off of a generator, and it's literally like in the jungle somewhere.
What are the Mark, in the 90s they used to do these in
the raves?
It's like,
yeah,
a rave.
exactly. It's like,
so
the
it's
Cuban
a gay rave.
It's like a gay Cuban rave. Yeah.
And so for wild. what do you think, like, with Obama and the Castro sort of like, no, you go first. No, you go first. I mean, where do you think all this this political discussion that's happening lately is going?
In Miami, it's really interesting because you have kind of the two schools of thought. You have the older Cubans who are completely very staunchly against getting rid of the embargo or traveling to Cuba, God forbid. And then you have like the younger Cuban Americans, people of my generation. Who grew up here and it's like, yeah, hey, let's go to Cuba. It sounds kind
care.
Of interesting.
It's like,
I think it sounds like fun.
It's exactly. So I think it's we're experiencing a changing of the guard. Interestingly enough, we have people like the Cuban American National Foundation, which is like, the bastion of conservative Cubans in the United States. And they're kind of saying, okay, we'll give this a try.
And
that's
see how it goes.
That's pretty groundbreaking because, I mean, 40, 50 years later, to say, all right, we'll give it a try.
I was doing a little research on why this embargo keeps sticking around and sticking around and sticking around. Well, guess who sort of reinforced it and drew its claws into the American psyche?
What?
Jesse Helms.
Really? How?
Yeah. From North Carolina. What is he doing involved in this?
The Helms-Burton Act, yeah.
Why would Cuban Americans sort of tie their hopes and aspirations to conservative, fundamentalist, and some pretty racist politicians?
I think it's the Cuban issue, as we call it in Miami. It's a pretty complicated one. You have people who are now in their 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. Who were really forced out of Cuba by the political change, and it's kind of never easy to say, oh well, I can't go back there because I can't speak my mind, and it's hard to say, well, now we should be friends with these people.
And a lot of these people really feel like they were robbed because
they were robbed.
Affluent people, and they had mansions and yachts, and then they were said, get the hell out.
And I'm all for doing changing the embargo, but the majority of people were not affluent, which is the common misconception outside of Miami. Because Lord knows my grandparents ain't got enough two dimes to rub together. Because they did.
So anybody that wasn't a communist, they kicked out.
Well, yeah, it's either kind of align
change,
yourself or you can leave.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think that the embargo stayed as long? I mean, do you see that in the next 5 years this embargo being lifted?
I think it's very likely that we're moving towards lifting the embargo.
What does that mean for Cuba? And what does that mean for Cuban Americans and you?
I think it means, for my generation, it means that we could probably access what we've only known through stories. Because, people my age feel a very strong affinity to being Cuban American.
Yeah.
But in most cases, never have been to Cuba. And it's based on the feelings that you're getting from your grandparents or your parents, and now being able to actually connect with the land, which is something completely different, at a completely different level. I think it's going to mean a great deal. It's going to mean more interaction, which I think it leads to democracy. I mean, hey, look how great it can be on the
so
other side.
So fresh sunshine and air. But you know what? Another thing that fresh sunshine and air leads to is bringing this sort of time capsule out into the open. And because Carmelita Tropicana, the New York City-based performance artist, she sort of touched on this, was that when you go to Cuba, you feel like you're in a country trapped in time. And in a lot of ways, because I'm a Puerto Rican, and it's like you always hear of what Puerto Rico was like in the 1950s and 40s. You know, you see photographs, but to actually experience a society that's sort of been trapped in time and not really changed relatively much.
There was a certain heyday, definitely like in the 40s and 50s that Cuba had. I mean, people were, the jet set would go there. But like, even in watching that documentary that they have, Luchando, the cars that you always hear about, these old cars that are still there, and you still see these old cars that from the 50s and, you know, 60s.
Yeah, there's a fabulous film called the Yank Tanks.
The Yank Tanks?
And you can see all about how they even still preserve them. It's, it's pretty...
I'm sure some of them are just held together by duct tape or something,
A lot of them are held together by duct tape. or rice and beans or something. Right. Yeah.
What is it? I mean, I guess that Detroit could learn something from a lot of these sort of Cuban repair shops, you know?
Right.
It's like getting their
make cars
from...
like you did in the 50s.
Well, there were simpler cars, so they're easier to repair back then.
True.
So they weren't as complex.
So Luchando, the documentary about Cuban hookers, tranny hookers.
Sex workers.
What's the difference between a hooker and a sex worker?
Well, one's a politically correct term and one's, you know...
So one would not offend people to be called... Because I know hookers who are like proud to be hookers.
The hooker pride, yay.
Yeah, you know, it's like, what's fun? It's like...
I don't think you could call them puta, which would be what you would say in Cuba. So,
well, it's meant to be derogatory, right?
Well, yeah, it is. But you have various hookers in this Luchando. There's the big hooker with the chubbiness, and then there's the very handsome hooker, then there's the tranny hooker, and then there's the one that's kind of like, I don't know how to describe him. A father of two who says he does it to support his kids.
So he's a male escort.
Think he's really like likes it.
Or like male hooker.
Gay for pay.
Or mooker.
I like that better. Mooker.
A mooker.
A mooker.
A male hooker. But why is this film so popular? Well, it sold out and you guys had to do a simultaneous showing.
Well, we've opened up another auditorium just so we could accommodate all the requests. Again, I think it allows people to see what the life of hookers in Cuba is.
But a lot of the people that are coming out for that show are actually straight, is what I heard.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fascinating. Again, there's this hunger for anything that's Cuban. And that's why Cuban nostalgia does so well.
I'm hungry for a Cuban sandwich right now.
A medianoche?
A medianoche.
Is that what they're called?
Medianoche.
With the ham and the pickle.
Good stuff.
I love that.
Why is it the bread in the medianoche is like yellow or something?
It's like a yellow sweet bread.
It's kind of like a brioche, but not
Are
quite.
You only supposed to eat it at midnight?
No, Cubans eat it anytime. Then again, Cubans are so late that if they were to eat it at midnight, it would be like 3 o'clock in the morning. Right. So,
who was later, Cubans or Puerto Ricans?
Oh, stop that.
It's a miracle that they show up anywhere at any time.
That's a sort of like a quintessential question.
Yeah.
Latino or Cuban and Puerto Rican culture tends to be very laid back.
Very.
Is it the heat?
That's what I think. It has to be the heat. It's too hot to do anything.
It's the heat.
It's too hot to get excited about anything.
Because even like checking
except each other.
I don't want to be like checking into the motel. The receptionist, she was like, "I'll be right back," and she's just walking real slowly, getting the key, coming back, and it was like, and I was like, you know, if you know you're in Miami because everyone's like really chill. You know.
Yeah, it's like there's a fire in the building.
There's a fire burning.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I better get my stuff, huh?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to burn down. And then I won't have any stuff.
So what else are you looking forward to?
We just, very last minute, are hosting a screening of Outrage.
Oh, yeah. I heard
about that. Yay! Yeah. Tambourine that.
Woo!
I heard that, who was it, the former governor of New Jersey walked out during the screening of it because they interviewed his wife. But then he later said, I didn't walk out because of that. He left after something.
So let's explain to the listeners. Outrage is a documentary on...
On closeted queer politician. Closeted gay politicians.
Doesn't that sound wonderful?
Absolutely. I mean, and, you know, people like Barney Frank, Jim McGreevy, Larry Kramer.
You're saving me a seat for that one, right?
Absolutely.
I'm dying to see that one.
Yeah, we're very excited. We have the Florida premiere. Just got screened into Tribeca just a few days ago, and we're bringing it in 2 days' time. It all came together today, so we're very excited.
So they're like literally working on this on Final Cut Pro at the last second.
Exactly.
Exactly. Pulling out all the cops and hiccups.
And the great thing about Outrage is it attempts to out Florida's governor, Charlie Crist.
Yeah.
Whoa. Who, funnily enough, married the heiress to a wig and beard company.
Get the fuck out. Get the hell out. Yeah. No way.
Yeah. His beard
makes
money from making beards.
Yeah.
Because there's some pretty hard evidence that he is gay, isn't there?
There's some pretty strong evidence.
Or compelling evidence.
Yeah. That he's a confirmed bachelor. Well, until recently. Anyways.
What day is Outrage showing?
Outrage is showing on Thursday, April the 30th at 7:15.
I'll be there. Yeah. Unless we're doing something. I think we're interviewing somebody. Are we interviewing somebody?
I don't know if we are. We may be.
I'm but totally dying.
What I'm
most
excited
that, yeah.
about is John Waters is coming out. He's not showing a film, is he?
No, we're doing on Friday, May the 1st at the Lincoln Theater, we are doing an evening with John Waters. He's doing his one-man act of sorts.
Okay.
Kind of he shares his unique obsession.
So is he going to jump on a trampoline and then start shooting?
At, art.
Yeah.
You know, John's like 62. I don't think he's jumping on trampolines anymore. But
or is he going to eat dog poop?
I hope he doesn't eat dog poop. No, no.
He's just going to sit there, stand there with his ascot on. And
talk about his drag queen friend Divine, who did eat dog poop, who did jump on a trampoline and alleged, well, she didn't really kill anybody. It was for art.
The things we do for art.
But so this the Prince of Trash, John Waters, is going to be in person talking about his life, his work, and his legacy.
It's pretty a pretty hysterical evening. It's John Waters, This Filthy World, Dirtier and Filthier.
And so you get to, if you can pay the right amount of money, you can actually touch him.
Right, exactly.
And he can escape.
He's really great. He's very sweet. He's going to stay for photos, and people are going to be able to have a drink with John, and he's really outrageous, so it's going to be a fun evening. And we're also presenting him with our Career Achievement Award, so which is obviously very...
Is this the first time you guys have done this?
Well, no, we do a Career Achievement Award every year. We've honored people like Francois Ozon, Greg Araki, Christine Vachon, and this year John was a perfect fit.
Because Gus Van Sant anytime soon?
Maybe.
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 Everything's a possibility.
So yeah, if they show up, they'll get the award.
No, because in other years, people haven't. Francois Zon couldn't come, and we still gave him the award.
That's so nice.
Yeah,
here's the award.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and so we'll definitely be attending that as well. What are some of the lesser known sort of like shorts and movies that sort of may not necessarily get as much attention, but are worth checking out?
We do shorts programs. We do, tonight actually is our Best of Boys shorts program, What Boys Want.
Ooh.
Which is a pretty hysterical evening of...
That's going to be Wednesday?
That is Tuesday.
Oh, so well, we're taping, night, yeah, so you missed it.
But it was so good.
Next year.
And actually it is something, it's a traditional program we do every year. Of lighthearted boy shorts. We're doing a evening of women's shorts film on Thursday, April the 30th, What Girls Like at 7:30.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to also draw attention to El Niño Pez because, especially for women like my younger sister, hip lesbian Latina chicks, because this is like, when we were watching it, it reminds me of a telenovela, but with lots of hot lesbian sex in it.
And that's really what it's all about, at least if you're lesbian.
But there's something for the gay guys, because El Niño Pez also has a wonderful murder in it. That's sort of like a mystery.
And we know the gay guys love murders, right?
They love murder mysteries.
Am I giving the movie away?
A little bit.
Maybe.
I thought it was evident that somebody got killed for within 5 minutes of the movie.
Well, there's lots of it in there, though.
There's a lot of it.
I'm not going to give away
that. And I haven't even finished watching it. How can I give it away if I haven't...
El Niño Pez is about she gave birth to a Pez dispenser. And
and what day is that showing?
That's showing Wednesday, April the 29th.
Oh, that's exciting. Well, so that's a good, if you're a single Latina lesbian living in Miami, it's a good chance to go out and check out the scene.
But you have some big shows coming up too. What's it Little Ashes is it called?
Yeah, we're really excited. We have the Florida premiere, the East Coast premiere of Little Ashes, which is the new film with Robert Pattinson from Twilight.
Yeah. Is he naked in it?
He's naked in it.
Completely naked?
Well, you'd have to see the movie to find out.
But he plays Salvador Dali?
He plays young Salvador Dali, and Javier, the very, very sexy Javier Beltran, plays Federico Garcia Lorca. And they were lovers.
And they were lovers. So Dali the painter and Lorca the poet.
Lorca the poet.
Yeah.
Does he bring out his vampire side in it?
He's just as white.
He's sucking something else.
Maria here, the publicist, is she's losing it.
Yeah.
She's like, oh no, I'm laughing so much. So, what else do you got? Yeah.
What's closing night?
That Little Ashes is our closing night film. Yeah, yeah.
And Saturday, the big show is?
Saturday, well, we have a couple of big shows. We have, for the women, Chica Busca Chica, which is like Spain's answer to the L word.
Girl Seeks Girl.
Chica Busca Chica.
Chica Busca Chica. Yeah.
That sounds like it could be a song or almost. Chica Busca Chica.
Boom, boom, boom. Yeah.
Chica Busca Chica. Chica Busca Chica. That could work.
You got the soundtrack down.
And for the boys?
And for the boys, Shank from the UK, which is youth angst.
Youth angst.
Sexy, edgy, gritty. Good stuff.
Okay.
Where do you see
we're talking to the director, I think, from Shank.
Yeah, we're going to be talking to him. You know, for the rest of the week, we're actually talking to all sorts of fabulous people from. We're actually talking to Andrea Franco, the director of Paolo, and Emma Mariela Vitale. She's the. She's the lead, but she's also a pop star from Argentina.
Yes.
Yes.
So she's going to be hopefully playing some of our music in our hotel studio in Miami Beach. And we're also talking, hopefully we'll be getting to have our photo taken with John Waters and possibly a little bit more. But we got to keep that a little secret because we don't know exactly how that's going to play out. But where do you see the film festival going in the next 5 to 10 years?
You know, what I hope it's going to continue to do is create more and more opportunities for gay filmmakers to make their stories. And I think that we'll see more and more films about everyday gay life rather than just kind of coming of age stories, which I think we're a little over.
Coming of age.
Or coming out.
Or coming stories. Out, yeah.
I'm gay and I'm proud of it. I'm proud to be a Latino and gay.
Right.
And an alcoholic.
I eat worms.
And we see a lot of that. But, you know, we see more and more films kind of that echo what's going on in the community. So this year, a really big theme in the film festival has been gay families and like alternative families, adoption, surrogacy. Creating an alternative family. And then at the polar opposite end of that, we still have that edgy, gritty, dark side of gay life that we kind of all love. So we're not giving that up one for the other. But I think we're seeing more and more films that echo what's going on in the community. Marriage is going to be more and more a prevalent theme in films coming out. Again, and then just everyday gay life, being not so much a film about gay people, about then gay people in a film.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us. Looking forward to seeing all the films. We're here in Miami. Go hang out with us at the Miami Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. That's correct. You guys have Fort Lauderdale in the title, too.
We do. We do. We do 4 days of Fort Lauderdale from Thursday, April the 30th through Sunday, May the 3rd.
So, and where can people buy their tickets?
MGLFF.com and at the box office at all of our theaters, including the Regal.
But you recommend that people, for some of these films, to buy their tickets ahead of time, because if they go the night of the event, they'd probably be sold out.
Yeah, totally. We sell out quite a bit, so buy all your films in advance at MGLFF.
Can they do a pass?
We have a pass for our upper echelon producer circle members or donors.
How much does a person have to give to do that?
They start about $1,000.
Oh. Ooh. That's for the high rollers.
For the high rollers.
But you know, average ticket price is about $10 to $12. So.
Actually, for members, it's only $7.
$7?
Yeah, it's cheaper than going to the movies on your, you know, anywhere else.
And so the membership price is how much?
Starts at $50 and gets you discounted tickets and priority entrance and benefits all year long.
Why not do it, people? Exactly. Why not?
Do it.
Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much, Kareem. Thank you.
It was a beautiful night.
Also here today, we're talking to Juan Carlos Saldivar. He's a documentary filmmaker. His new short film, Jose Martí and I, deals with the possibility of the Cuban founding father, the political and literary figure, Jose Martí, could possibly have been gay. Who is Jose Martí, for the people who don't know?
Jose Martí is credited with having led the Cuban independence from Spain in the late 1800s. He's by far the largest literary and political figure that Cuba has ever produced.
He was a poet, too.
He was a poet. He lived in exile most of his life, and he was quite well-traveled. He lived in Paris. He went to Mexico. He was widely published all over Central America and Europe.
So when you study liberal arts in college, chances are you're probably going to read something by Jose Martí.
Probably. There definitely are statues of him in Paris and in Mexico City, and you'll find one in Central Park even.
Because the way I know Jose Martí is because my niece went to a school, a day school here in Miami called Jose Martí School. Mm-hmm. But she it was run by a Cuban family. And so they would always say, "Bienvenidos a Jose Martí School."
So your niece actually yelled at your grandmother because she was saying, "You go to Jose Martí School." And she's like, "No, abuela, it's Jose Martí School."
School.
So Jose Martí,
he's gay.
There is a bust of Jose Martí in every school in Cuba, and probably in Miami too, mm-hmm. because Cubans love him.
And so he was in Cuba. He was a political dissident because he was writing about Spain.
He was a nationalist.
So he wanted to be away from Spain, but then he actually got exiled to Spain.
Yes. Yeah, because Cuba was still a colony at the time.
So they actually brought him to Spain because they wanted to keep an eye on him.
When he was 15, he was already writing for a pamphlet that was a nationalist pamphlet. The police came into his house, or the authorities went into his house and found this letter. And so based on the handwriting, they found him guilty of writing this.
And so they sent him to prison, or they just sent him
propaganda.
Back to Spain?
They actually put him in hard labor prison, and he served.
And that's where he turned gay.
I think he started earlier. But he served hard labor in Isla de Pinos, and then his father pleaded, and they ended up exiling him to Spain.
Is it obviously, is it controversial, the notion that one of Cuba's founding fathers could have been
yes,
gay,
he's very controversial because he's kind of an untouchable figure. He's become an icon, and this is exactly why I wanted to sort of
like Thomas Jefferson or Abraham Lincoln.
And you've heard about the man who slept in Lincoln's bed, right?
So he's kind of like the Abraham Lincoln of Cuba.
Apparently, yes.
That it's very people like, well, he slept with a lot of men, doesn't make him gay.
And instead of a beard, he had a big funny mustache.
That
looked like a moth.
What makes you think he is gay? From his writings or?
Well, the thing is that the idea of gay didn't really exist until 1860 something, and when it was introduced at that time, it was a pathological condition. It was introduced as a disease, basically.
But men were having sex with men.
Yeah, I mean, since the beginning of time, I think. And I've actually been inspired a lot by David Reicher, who made this collection of did an exhibit, The Travel. It was sponsored by Showtime, I think. And it was a collection of men together, photographs of men together during the gold rush. Mm-hmm. And then he made a book with letters that these men wrote to each other. And he has this theory that it was actually in Victorian times, even though the sexes were very divided and things were very conservative, there was a space for the sexes to be close to each other. Mm-hmm. And because this wasn't defined, it wasn't really a threat to society because men were still having and women were having arranged marriages and so on.
And there was the love that didn't speak its name. So you could do it all you want, just don't talk about it. But was there clues in his writings about his relationships with men?
Well, you know, I'm gay, so I grew up with him, and I always sort of, you know, when you're gay, you look at the world, you're not, all these messages that you're, or heterosexual messages that are given to you, you always sort of filter, and you're looking for little scraps of people that think like you. And so I think that because we've sort of been denied this history that that a heterosexual world has
been erased.
We sort of were always looking for bits and pieces. So to me, there was always things in him and in his writings that sort of mirrored some of the things that I was feeling.
So it's kind of like a gay aesthetic in a way?
Sentiment. I mean, they say that he's not a romantic, but to me, he was very much a romantic, and that there was something, you know, there were, when you grow up in Cuba, they give you this book called The Golden Age, La Edad de Oro. And every kid in Cuba has read this book.
The Golden Age.
The Golden Age.
Age.
And, age. Oh. The Golden... We've been doing that a lot this week.
And so it's a collection of poems, but also fairy tales. Yeah. And then I had an aunt who also gave me the collections of fairy tales by Oscar Wilde, which, you know, not a lot of people know, but some people know very well. And I think in reading both of them, even as a little kid, I saw a lot of similarities because they both tend to be very cruel. Both of these... of the heroes in all of these stories are very...
What, is there a story oppressed. Of Jose Marti that an American might know? Is there a short story or a poem that they might be very familiar with this? Or is it...
I wonder.
I don't know if it translates well to English.
I just don't know. I mean, part of my reason... part of the reason behind making this film is sort of to resuscitate his name a little bit in North America and...
Well, it's pretty campy, though. It's a pretty campy movie. You're dressed almost like in drag as Jose Marti.
I do. I turn him into... Because, this is one of the things. And I'm the movie's turning into a feature, so I think I'll have
more...
Oh, it is? Yeah, I'll have more time to develop a lot of these ideas.
And will
ideas.
You be playing Jose Marti in the feature?
It depends on how much money I get. I might get an actor, or I might just do it myself and get the actor to do the voiceover. So it depends. But throughout the film, because I'm sort of introducing this feminine element to Jose Marti that has been sort of shaven off by his historians. What I do is throughout the movie, you see this person transforming and then slowly you realize that it's Jose Marti turning into one of his favorite. Well, it's actually one of his most famous poems. It's about this flamenco dancer. So throughout the movie, I sort of turn him into this flamenco dancer.
Because I'm watching this and I'm all of a sudden you're like chopping off your body hair. And I'm like, that was a lot of hair. Was that actually your own hair that you were chopping off?
Yes.
Or did you add extra hair to
no,
it?
No, I did chop off
all my
hair.
You're not a very hairy guy,
I'm hairy, though.
I've got some hair. I have a lot of hair.
Well, you know, one of the great things about doing a daily talk show that deals with gay and lesbian issues to... with a broad overarching theme, which is general culture, is that we always tend to discover people that we didn't think were gay turned out to be gay, like Jose Marti or like George Washington Carver.
I would have never known.
Really?
You know, and so people send us these things or we interview somebody and then, or we just stumble across in doing our research and we see like George Washington Carver, he actually got videotaped. And he... And his voice was so light and
effeminate
and scholarly, and he was like, I don't feel like I deserve this award, but I'm deeply humbled by this beautiful achievement, young man. Interest you in the therapeutic benefits of a hot peanut oil massage? So it turns out that George Washington Carver actually liked to give hot peanut oil massages to young college athletes.
Is that true?
At Tuskegee, true. Where he worked. And so...
Well, Whitman loved to watch sports. Like, he loved to watch the youth display themselves.
Walt Whitman used to sit around the bearded giant polar
He'd
bear.
He'd come in from his farm.
And, you know, by now, I think The Leaves of Grass, a lot of gay historians would argue, is sort of the manifesto of homosexuality because Leaves of Grass is his major work. Mm-hmm. And actually, José Martí translated that work into Spanish. And it was José Martí who introduced Whitman into the Latin American world by writing this beautiful essay about him. He also championed Oscar Wilde, I found out. When Oscar Wilde, right before his trial, was doing a tour of North America, José Martí wrote this beautiful essay after one of his engagements.
What does it mean for Cuban identity or the fact that the Cuban nation or nationalism is so tied to this one individual? Sort of like, you know, I guess if Abraham Lincoln was gay.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's messed up, actually.
I mean, do you think...
You know why? Because the weird thing about it is that Cuban people are very divided ideologically, right? You have the communist regime in Cuba, and then you have all the exiles that have sort of built a little empire in the United States.
Kind of a flock to the conservative American homophobic politics.
Because they had such a horrible time over there. They sort of went to the other end of the spectrum. But, however, both of those groups idolize Jose Marti. And this is actually the inspiration for the movie, because I'm thinking, how can two people that hate each other actually have the same hero? Like, what is that all about? you know.
How can two people who hate each other have the same hero?
Yeah, how can they revere the same? Well, I think it's because they're revering not a real person, but sort of a reinterpretation of who that person was to serve their political agenda.
They see what they want to see in that person. It's, you know, it's like Shiite Muslims and Sunni Muslims. They fight like crazy, or, you know, different sects of Christianity.
Yeah. So is Jose Marti sort of gone to the level of a spiritual leader in a sense?
He's called the apostle, so many people call him. He's sort of like a saint. He's sort of this untouchable figure.
So he's the Jesus for Cubans.
Correct.
How is your short eight and a half minute film about turning Jose Marti into a drag queen, basically? Mm-hmm. How has that been received by Cubans?
The film is just beginning the festival circuit. So it played in L.A. at Fusion. It might be at our fest a little later. I'm about to find out. Mm-hmm. And so the reaction was pretty good over there. I was in LA to get the Q&A, mm-hmm. And it was a group of shorts.
Okay.
So I didn't really get any direct reactions. I mean, I haven't gotten any hate mail or anything. So but I've gotten a lot of people calling me because they want to see it. Like,
so what are you expecting? Do you think straight people will come and see it and be like, what are you doing to our national figure?
You know, I don't think so, because none of the things that I say are really... untrue. Like, all of the facts are true. So all I'm doing...
Well, you're having Jose Marti making out with guys.
He doesn't make out yet. Maybe in the future I'll have...
I think it was lips on lips.
Kissing
it. There was lip on lip action.
But Russians used to do that. Men used to do that too.
It's not meant to be...
It was a peck. But, you know, if you see a lot of those photos that David Ratcher put together, they're sitting on each other's laps and they're playing with each other's earlobes. And
I think, you know, the people had a different sense of what intimacy was back in those days, too. And I think that there was a, you know, especially in American society, we get so hyper masculinized that, you know, you used to be able to put your hand arm around your buddy and walk down the street and people didn't really think anything of it. But now it's like you do that and that's identified as being gay.
Mm-hmm. In Egypt, I went to Egypt last year and men walk hand in hand.
Yeah.
And they grab each other by the waist, you know, with their crotches together, and they stand there having conversations in the middle of the sidewalk. And it's like the weirdest thing, because obviously it's a very homophobic country, but you know, just in general, and yet you see this displays of male affection all the time, and
fascinating,
kind of a little bit.
Now, you escaped from Cuba at the age of 13.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get out?
I got out on a boat called the Party Girl.
Appropriate name.
Isn't that a movie with Parker Posey?
It's a prophecy. That'll be the name of my biography eventually.
Party girl.
So you rode the party girl.
So I grew up a communist because my cousin, my family sort of divided at the beginning of the of the revolution, the Cuban Revolution. So I had uncles that live here, but we grew up. There was never a chance for us to leave, so I lived as a communist. And then the Mariel boat lift happened in 1980. And my uncles went, and the opportunity to come arose. And so I actually made a film about it, which was on POV and PBS. Mm-hmm. And it still airs once in a while.
Okay, and that is called?
It's called 90 Miles, and there's a website, www.90miles.org.
And we can learn more about your work also directly at saldivar.info, because .com was taken.
By a pharmaceutical company in Spain. Apparently their last name is Basque.
That happens to me too. Like Fausto.com is owned by a book publishing company in Argentina.
The big literary name. Fausto is a great name.
Well, and I know, but I'm more famous than anybody else.
Saldivar is very obscure.
Especially for a website, you know? So it's they squat on it. Uh-huh. So they're not even doing anything with it. They just have it redirecting to their website.
They're expecting to get $1 million.
Zaldivar does sound like some kind of drug you would take for like a heart murmur or something.
Yeah.
Or to get an erection.
With Saldivar, I understand history better. Well, and we do. We want to thank you so much for coming on the show. We'll have to wait for your full-length feature film, Jose Marti and I.
But let's touch on one thing quick before we go. You actually wrote a screenplay about a guy who dresses up as a woman and turns him into a superhero.
Yes, actually. And, you know, this is a recom...
Violenta?
It's called Violenta.
Okay.
And Violenta is sort of a pun on the word violet. But it means violent.
Okay.
So, and his problem is that he's very violent. He has to come to terms with his temper.
So he,
but, you know, this is an upcoming, in the feature of Marti and I, I'm kind of tackle this because this is a recurring theme for me, this whole transformation thing. And it's because I was given growth hormones when I was 11, right before I left Cuba.
And to get taller?
You were short?
I guess to, like, be less feminine is what I'm figuring.
Really? Like they gave you testosterone as a child?
And apparently this was very popular in the 70s and 80s. So this is something, this it's called Marty and I, because the I part is going to be sort of this little exploration with my family about this.
You know, I had a friend who was Cuban as a childhood, and they did something similar in therapy because he was short.
Yeah, and I've met people here, actually, in the United States who said, yeah, they did that to me. And
but now it's like, now it's considered...
Well, not now Madonna's doing it to keep young or something.
But I had a college professor not too long ago, and he was giving it to his kids or something like that, because his kids were going to be short. So
yeah, I'm going to look into it. It does. It changes your body completely. You know, you walk around with a hard on the whole time.
Really?
Yeah, everything, like your feature, it sort of brings on puberty much quicker.
Does it make, you know, bigger?
Yes. What do you want me to say to that?
Well, how much taller do you think it made you, like compared to your parents? Or
I was small and kind of dainty, and all of a sudden I was like, you know, like an adolescent with the big nose and the long
now he's
neck
a man
and the deep voice.
Ooh!
Wow. So you're going to be at the screening of Jose Marti and I at Saturday, May 2nd at the Miami Beach Cinematheque.
Yes, I'm going to be there at 3 p.m. and I'm going to stay afterwards for Q&A if anybody wants to ask questions.
Mm-hmm. So, like, what do you think is the most common question they're going to ask you? Is like, Jose Marti
was
gay?
He really gay?
Was,
I'm anticipating. I don't know. This is going to be my first Q&A, one of many. So.
Well, I mean, I'm surprised. I've heard a lot about it. It's sort of like that song in the distance that you hear, because it's like, you know, I like Larry LaFontaine, one of our listeners. He's just all over queer Latino studies.
Oh, he's going to be like, he's going to be listening.
A lot he's drooling right now.
A lot of people are like, oh my God, finally somebody said that. Or like, I dressed up like him and I went to we just had our first gay pride. So I showed up and I took some pictures and I'm going to put them up on the website.
Oh yeah.
And so it's going to be a series of performances. I want Marti to go to this gay events, you know, and take and document it. And so, and a lot of people stop me and they're like, oh my God, scandalous, but thank you.
Well, we want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you guys for having me.
We're going to be leaving you guys with a little bit of music from Eric Lindell. This is Love Can't Find a Way, available through our website, feastoffun.com. We also played earlier in the show a little bit of Ariel Aparicio. He's a Latino queer musician. Mm-hmm. I'm working it.
You work that Latin angle, that gay Latin angle. And I want to remind the listeners, too, that we can't do the show without your help. So please visit our website, feastoffun.com, make a donation, buy a t-shirt. And if you're in Miami, come and meet us out at the film festival.
Yeah, we're going to be there as much as we can. You also can go to the website, feastoffun.com, and stay tuned for details. We might have a listener meetup, or just contact me on Facebook, you know. I mean, you know, we're in a hotel, and we have a bottle of vodka here. Remember that you can subscribe to the Feast of Fun podcast on the iTunes Music Store and never miss a delicious show. Just go to tinyurl.com/feastoffun and stick it in your iPod. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
If love ain't on your mind, and stroll on down the line, yeah. It's a sad